You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And the rumor mill keeps on churning. Hi, everyone, and welcome in to a new episode this Wednesday here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is again brought to you courtesy of our friends over at Twillery, where if you go to twillery.com/Houston, you can use the promo code Houston for $25 off on their complete line of apparel. We're also sponsored by Gallery Furniture, where the Memorial Day Super Sale is still going on. Visit any Houston area Gallery Furniture location or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of all the specials. As we chat this Wednesday evening, Game 3 of the NBA Finals is about to tip off from Oakland. Unfortunately, the Rockets, of course, not a part of that. Raptors and Warriors tied at one game apiece. There are implications for Houston, depending on who wins the series, and we'll have plenty of time in the days and weeks ahead to discuss what those are as the series plays out. For today, though, we're going to be talking about news that directly impacts the Rockets, that being the report from Mark Stein of the New York Times late Tuesday evening in his weekly NBA newsletter that the Rockets are proceeding under the assumption that at least one of Clint Capela, Eric Gordon, and PJ Tucker will not be with the team this coming season. Stein reporting that in his weekly NBA newsletter, which I strongly encourage you to subscribe to. Lots of great tidbits and juicy nuggets from around the association. So in today's show, we'll look at each of those three big names, Capela, Tucker, and Gordon, what the chances are that any gets moved this summer. And then towards the end of the program, we'll look at another interesting numerical anecdote from Stein's newsletter on Tuesday, that involving James Harden and the Rockets' championship window, which might be open a bit longer than what conventional wisdom at the moment would seem to suggest. Anyway, we'll start today by looking at the more concrete info, which is about the three names that, according to Stein, have the Rockets actively exploring the trade market for all of them. And as I see it, the real story here is not the headline porn of the Rockets shopping those three names. Because if you're a Rockets fan, if you listen to this podcast or you actively keep up with the news of the offseason, this should not come as a surprise. The true news of this, in my opinion, is that the Rockets are apparently optimistic that they will come to an agreement, which is why, as Stein reports, that the Rockets are operating under the assumption that at least one of those three mainstays will not be a Rocket next year. Now, I understand that there's a little bit of shock value at the inclusion of PJ Tucker, Capela, and Gordon for various reasons. Each has been speculated for a while. Capela, after the disappointing Western Conference semis against the Warriors, and the fact that he's such a good asset at 25 years old, signed for four more years, he makes sense as someone that could be more valuable to other teams than the Rockets, one of the true, perhaps the only young asset that the team has that should be desirable to a lot of teams, not just contenders, but rebuilding ones as well. And then with Eric Gordon, it's less about wanting to trade him, but it's more about the contract. With him having just 1 year left on his deal, there are certain situations where the Rockets might want to explore the market rather than risk losing him for no compensation next summer. Tucker is someone that we have not heard before, but personally, I don't put a lot of stock in it. It's just that if you were going to explore the market, which obviously the Rockets are, after coming up short 2 years in a row against the Warriors, the Rockets need to look at all possibilities to improve the roster short of trading James Harden. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the scope narrows very, very quickly, because most of the roster, when you look at the bench, is heading into free agency, so they can't be dealt. The Rockets, of course, are well over the salary cap, so the most they have of their own to spend on free agents is the $5.7 million taxpayer MLE, and that may be ticketed for either Austin Rivers or Daniel House. Even if they do go outside to fill that spot, you're only looking at $5, $6 million a year. You're probably not going to have someone that radically transforms your outlook from that. So if the Rockets are really going to make a splash this offseason from a personnel standpoint, it's going to have to be by trade. We've talked about it before, and there aren't a lot of bodies off the bench that they can move, because really, all they have under contract is Nene, who's at 36 years old. If anything, he's just in an expiring contract, salary filler at nearly $4 million a season. He's certainly not an asset, and he might retire at his age. Then you have partial guarantees to Isaiah Hartenstein, Gary Clark, who maybe they're minor positive assets, but they haven't proven anything yet. And they also make such little money that it's not like you can go very far in terms of matching salary with those guys anyway. From a salary standpoint and a talent standpoint, if you're going to trade, it's going to have to come from your starting five, because on the bench, Nene, Hartenstein, and Clark, those are the only three that you really have under contract. Everyone else, the Rivers, House, Fareed, Shumpert, that tier, they're heading into free agency, so you're not going to be able to trade them other than, well, Shumpert's the only one, because that's the only one of the four that the Rockets even have their bird right. So the others don't even really need that much help from the Rockets in terms of a conceivable sign and trade. So really, Shumpert, it's not just that your bench guys are going into free agency. Most of them you don't even have bird rights to. So it's really unlikely they can be a part of your trade proposals. So the Rockets are going to have to look at the starting five, but they're obviously not going to deal James Harden. Makes no sense to trade a legitimate MVP who's just 29 years old. You never get fair value for those, especially when they're under contract for three, four more years, as Harden is. And as Stein points out with Chris Paul, it's not so much that the Rockets would never move Chris Paul, but it's how much of a long shot it is that it would make sense. Stein refers to it as the complexities involved in moving Chris Paul, who at age 34 has 3 years and nearly $125 million left in his contract. The difficulty for the Rockets, and I've spelled it out on this podcast several times, is that it's hard to see a scenario where the Rockets upgrade from a basketball standpoint. The way the Rockets' cap situation is at the moment, about $20 million over, even if you were able to fully move Chris Paul's contract, you wouldn't have $38 million in space. You would have somewhere in the range of about $15 million in net extra room when you factor in also losing the mid-level exception. So for the Rockets, it's not that that's totally insignificant, but who is going to give you that room while not being compensated for taking Chris Paul's $38 million? That's the problem, is that even if the Rockets could conceivably do that, number one, it's not clear that that in and of itself is an upgrade over Chris Paul. And secondly, even if it was, I'm not sure there's a team out there that would be willing to take the $38 million a year contract for the next 3 years that a 34-year-old Chris Paul has on the books. So if it does make sense for Houston, which is a long shot, it's probably not going to make sense for another team. So the odds are, just for financial reasons, that the Rockets end up keeping Paul, because if you do move him, you would have to give up so much to offset the finances of it that it wouldn't be helping you from a basketball perspective, at least not in the next couple of years, which with a soon-to-be 30-year-old James Harden is what it's all about for the Rockets. So at that point, you're left with just three names: Capella, Gordon, and Tucker, both from a talent standpoint and a salary standpoint, because to get any sort of sizable acquisition, you need to make salaries work and come close. And the Rockets, a lot of scenarios, you'd have to deal at least one of them, and some, two of them. So it doesn't take a genius to figure out that when you hear the Rockets being active on the trade market, it's going to have to involve one and sometimes two of those three. There's no way around it. That said, in my opinion, the focus on Tucker is a little misguided. It's possible, because as great as he is for this basketball team, he is 34 years old. He's not a superstar, and he's not going to become one. So in theory, if the right piece came available, do I think Daryl Morey would move him? Yes. No one is untouchable other than probably James Harden, and PJ, as much as we love him, he's not at that point. However, I find it extremely unlikely that they would move him. It's just something that they have to say that they're open to, and technically they are, but I don't think anything actually comes of it. In fact, we heard from Kelly Eco at The Athletic that extension talks between the Rockets and PJ Tucker have started, and from what he understands, the Rockets are so enamored with Tucker that they want him to retire in Houston, and they've even discussed a role for him within the team when his playing days are done. So clearly, this is not something where the Rockets are looking to move him. It's just they want to upgrade their championship window, their odds, by any means necessary. And if the right player came available, while Tucker is really, really good as far as his defense, his presence, what he brings from a team perspective on both ends of the floor, his grit, what he means in the locker room to James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, who Kelly reported that any Tucker trade would come at the strong disapproval of both Coach D'Antoni and Harden. All those things are true. That said, if you could use Tucker as part of a piece to get a legitimate top 10 player, would you do it? Of course. It would suck to give him up. But the reality is the Rockets have to be open to that if, by chance, something comes available. That said, I'm not anticipating that. And short of something just astronomical coming down the pike in terms of a value deal where the Rockets can get just a transcendent talent, I just don't see any scenario where they would move him. Because for the same reasons that we've been outlining that Clint Capella could be dealt, the fact of the matter is, for other teams, he probably has more value, Capella, than he does in Houston, because his problems, Capella, with the Rockets, primarily how he matches up against the Warriors in a playoff series, it's not that relevant for other teams around the NBA, many of which are not even thinking about competing with the Warriors over the next year or two. Their window is beyond that, and Capella signed for 4 more years, just 25 years old, can fit into a lot of different situations. And of course, if you're in the East, then you don't even have to think about Draymond Green at the five and those Warriors death lineups until the finals, if you get there. So the Rockets, the Warriors are obviously their consideration, which makes Capella a disproportionately less valuable player to them, given how tilted the Rockets have to be when constructing their roster to competing with Golden State in the playoffs. Most other teams, not so much. And so that's why you combine that with his age and his contract, that other teams around the NBA might have more use for Capella than the Rockets from a value standpoint, and that's why you can see a deal coming together that makes sense for both sides, in which the Rockets could conceivably upgrade their team when they go up against Golden State, assuming they get another shot in the spring of 2020. With Tucker, it's right the opposite. People in Houston appreciate Tucker. Elsewhere, while certainly a lot of teams would like him, I don't think they would love him. At the end of the day, he's 34 years old. He's under contract for 2 more years, but what's more important than the contract, which is 2 years for Tucker compared to 4 more for Capella, is that at 34, you really only have 1 or 2 truly peak years left. So while a lot of lesser teams around the league, think Atlanta, Chicago, those types who have said even rebuilding teams could have interest in Capella, while it's not that they would not want Tucker, they're certainly not going to give major assets for a guy whose primary value to them would be as a locker room presence. Would they like to have him? Sure. Are they giving up the types of assets that the Rockets need to really make a run in 2020 to potentially be, for example, a third team in a hypothetical Jimmy Butler opt-in and trade scenario or anyone else that might be on the market this summer? I don't see it. They would like to have Tucker, but the value is just not going to be there because for the Rockets, Tucker is disproportionately more valuable against the Golden State Warriors. We've seen the value he brings defensively in terms of his flexibility, being able to play at the five. As much of a problem as Capella has been in that matchup, Tucker has been a solution. Despite the fact he's just 6'6", he can play the five and has had a lot of success, those tuck wagon lineups against the Warriors in the playoffs the last 2 years. He's actually been the only consistently viable five that the Rockets have had in 13 playoff games against the Warriors these last two springs. So that's why I have a tough time seeing his value to another team being more than what it is to the Rockets. If the right player came along, would Daryl Morey move him as much as it would hurt? Sure, because as good as PJ is, he's not elite. Conceivably, you could get better. In reality, it's really hard to see because for most teams, while they would like to have him, he would not be as vital to them because his window may not line up with theirs. Again, the rebuilding teams, while they'd like to have him around, he's a nice guy and he certainly would be a positive presence for young players. He's not going to really boost their championship window by any means to the same extent that he would with the Rockets. Maybe there's a few other contenders that could use him, but at that point, would they be willing to part with the types of pieces that somehow would be an even better fit for the Rockets against Golden State than PJ himself? I don't see it. The only way I see any scenario where PJ gets dealt is if it's just a salary filler for a true star, and he is the only option that the Rockets have, that there's just no other way they can make it work otherwise. Assuming that does not happen, and I think it's very unlikely, then I think Tucker is very safe for the same reason that I think Capella is in a lot of danger as far as not being a part of the team. Because from a value standpoint for Capella, you can see scenarios where for other teams, it means more to them than to the Rockets to have him on the roster. His weaknesses are not played up. The complete opposite is true with PJ Tucker. So while the Rockets have to say that everyone is available, and really everyone, assuming that they can't make it work for Chris Paul at his contract, really consists of just 3 players, it's a sexy headline. But the reality is that, number one, I think the Rockets have some optimism that they will come to a deal. And then secondly, when you look at the actual scenarios, it has to make sense for both sides. And while you can see it happening with Capella, it's tough to see it happening with Tucker. Now, I know conceivably you can argue all it takes is one team. You see that thrown out a lot. Even if there is one team that really likes Capella or really likes Tucker, you still need others in the bidding process to get a deal that really boosts your chances. Because even if there is a team, for example, that really wants Capella, they're certainly not going to go out of their way to give peak offers without any other leverage. So you need other teams, at least on the periphery of the talks, to leverage them into giving a little bit more and getting the right deal to boost your odds. So while you can point to in any scenario, yeah, all it takes is one team, that's true. But even in those scenarios, you want others in the market so that you can build up what you get as far as the return and command more. If you're Gerald Morey, boost your leverage. With Capella, that's going to be there. With Tucker, it's not. So that's why I'm pretty confident, barring just a wild scenario where the Rockets are somehow getting a top 10 type player, I don't know who or how that would be. Yeah, I think PJ's staying, and I think Capella, as I've said for a while, is by far the most likely one to go. Now, the name that's in the middle of Clint Capella and PJ Tucker is Eric Gordon. I haven't discussed him yet because a lot of the odds as far as whether I think he stays or goes are based on factors that, at this point, are unknown. I'll explain a bit more about what those are in just a few moments, but for now I want to pause and tell you a little bit about our friends and sponsors over at Twillery. Because with Twillery, smart casual just got smarter and cheaper. Twillery is built on a century-old family manufacturing business. They make millions of shirts a year for leading brands, and they leverage those contacts and their team's technical know-how to keep costs down while maintaining high standards in quality and craftsmanship. Their view is that shirts shouldn't wrinkle, itch, or sweat, because it's 2019. These guys know that shirts are a commodity, and they make stocking up your closet as simple as restocking beer in your fridge. Easy, affordable, and the perfect fit, guaranteed. They offer non-iron, untuckable, and performance dress shirts, and with free shipping and returns, you can try on some Twills risk-free. After all, feeling is believing. Twillery brings performance work shirts to the next level with four-way stretch material that shuts down wrinkles, stops sweat, and keeps you looking and feeling cool. Best of all, it's the top value in smart workwear. With the shop and bundle model, you all have access to shirts that competitors are selling for $100 and up for as low as $55 per shirt. Grab yourself some today at Twillery.com/Houston and use the promo code Houston for $25 off. They've even got a limited time Father's Day special where until June 16th, you can enjoy a free set of bottle opener collar stays. That's all from our friends over at Twillery, who you can visit at Twillery.com/Houston. That's Twillory. And don't forget to use that promo code Houston for an extra $25 off on anything in their complete apparel line. All right, jumping back into our program this Wednesday evening, June 5th. I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked on Rockets. Today's show, we're going through the New York Times report via Mark Stein's NBA newsletter. Comes out every Tuesday night, in which he said the Rockets are operating under the assumption that at least one of their veteran core of role players, that being Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, will not be back with the team next season. In the first segment, I explained what I thought it meant for Capella and PJ Tucker, primarily Capella of the two, much more likely to go because he's more likely to have interest on the outside market. And the other side of it, of course, Tucker is disproportionately more valuable to the Rockets given where they are in their contending cycle. And of course, the respect, the appreciation he has within the locker room, James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, so on and so forth. We can throw Chris Paul in there as well, assuming he stays. The guy that's in the middle is who I want to look at in this segment, and that's Eric Gordon. We talked about his situation a couple of times in late May after the Rockets were eliminated from the Western Conference semis. His outlook long-term in Houston is fascinating. The good news is that for a second consecutive year, he was extremely valuable in the playoffs. He was a difference maker against the Warriors. Just as we talk about PJ Tucker being disproportionately valuable against Golden State, we can throw Eric Gordon in there as well. His shooting finally got going from March onward, and his defense, not just against Golden State when he did a really good job on Klay Thompson, but Donovan Mitchell in round one, Eric Gordon locked him up. And as long as he's been in the league, it feels like it's been a while. He's only 30. We heard Wednesday that Eric Gordon would get a tryout along with Harden and PJ Tucker for Team USA later this summer, and it's easy to understand why. With his defense, with his shooting, he's a valuable commodity. And in a perfect world, the Rockets would have him around for a long time. He seems to fit really well alongside James Harden. There's a lot of trust there, and though he was injury-prone earlier in his career, he seems to have put those days behind him. So in a perfect world, yeah, he'd be a Rocket for a long time. He's a good fit. What makes it difficult? Well, there are two things. First, as mentioned in segment one, there is the need just to fill salary slots in trades. The Rockets don't have that much when it comes to making the math work. They also don't have that much in terms of desirable assets around the league. And as much as they like Gordon, for example, if the Sixers say that they're willing to move Jimmy Butler for him, then yeah, I think the Rockets, as much as they like Eric, they would take the plunge. They would take the risks that Jimmy Butler just has more high-end potential than Eric Gordon does. And both from a salary standpoint to make the math work and from just the standpoint of what the other team wants to make a trade worth their while, there are definitely scenarios where Eric Gordon could get dealt. The more fascinating aspect of Eric Gordon and his tradability, though, assuming that there's no perfect deal that comes along, where as much as they like him, the Rockets would move Eric simply because they think they're getting an upgrade, a true top 10, top 15, all-star type piece. Short of something like that, and the Rockets would take that as a pleasant surprise, I certainly think the Rockets, in a perfect world, would love to keep Eric around for the reasons that we said earlier. He seems to be such a great complimentary piece, whether he starts, comes off the bench, there's no ego, there's lots of problems, potentially being a number three behind James Harden, Chris Paul, who tend to be fairly ball dominant. For Eric to be able to go out and, though he can score 30 a night on occasions, you don't really have him clamoring for more touches or letting a lack of shots on offense affect his effort on defense. He seems to be the perfect role player when you combine his skill set for this team with his attitude, and that's really valuable. However, there is the fact that his contract is up after this season, and as much as they like him, if the Rockets feel they can't retain him long term, then they're going to have to think about whether, as valuable as he is that worth potentially losing him for zero compensation if he walks to another team next summer. So the big question with Eric, as I see it, is how open to an extension is he? From the Rockets' standpoint, they're paying him about $14 million next year. It's the last year of a four-year, $53 million deal that he signed back in July of 2016. So based on that contract, the most the Rockets can offer him in an annual extension would be about $17.5 million. And I'm sure the Rockets will try and offer something close to that this summer. Hopefully he takes it. If he does not, my odds of him staying in Houston, barring an injury or something that really undercuts his value, I would be skeptical. Because if $17.5 million is not enough to retain Eric Gordon, I don't see, even though the Rockets would have his bird rights, I don't see them going to $20-plus million a year to keep Eric Gordon on top of James Harden, Chris Paul, who are going to be making $40-plus million a year, Clint Capella, or whoever they trade him for. That's a $15 to $20 million salary slot. I know Tillman Fertitta has said that he'll pay the luxury tax, but it's one thing to pay the tax. If you're keeping all of those guys and Eric Gordon is making $20-25 million a year, at that point, your salary is going to be pushing $150 million for the team as a whole. And even if he's a really good owner, that is a ton to ask. So I think for the Rockets' standpoint, the big question is he amenable to a deal? And I'm sure for Eric, he doesn't know yet. His agent's going to be kind of quietly canvassing the market in the weeks ahead, and they'll see if they can come to terms on an agreement. They didn't last summer when they had some initial talks, but I could see where being 2 years out, no one really wants to commit that early because so many things can change around the league. At this point, just being 12 months away from free agency, Eric and his agent and the Rockets as well should have a much more clear understanding of his value, what his market might be, and it's just a matter of whether that price is agreeable. I hope it is. If it's not, then that's the scenario where, in my opinion, he becomes more tradable. However, it's not as simple as just saying, well, if he prices out the Rockets, that they'll move him, because he also has to make sense for the other team. Because if he's only viewed as a rental, then that's going to cut away at his value no matter what he does on the basketball floor. So the other team, they're going to want to know, number one, even though they would be getting his bird rights, first, does he want to stay with them? Is it a situation that Eric and his agent like? If it's not, then he has to be viewed as a rental, and that takes away some of his value and his worth to that team because they're not able to keep him long term. Secondly, they'll at least want to know some general parameters. Is it $20 million? Is it $25 million? Is it 15? Whatever the dollar figure a year is that Eric wants on his next contract. Of course, it's not binding, and everyone knows that going on, but they at least want to feel like if there's a team acquiring Eric Gordon, that there's a path to which they can keep him long-term, that he wants to be their Gordon, that is, and that both sides have at least an understanding of what the financial parameters might be and whether that team can and will meet that price. If there is, then sure, Eric could be dealt. If not, though, then it's going to undercut his value to that team. And at that point, it might be worth it for the Rockets, even if they can't come to an extension agreement with Gordon themselves. At the same time, he is valuable enough to where even if they can't get an extension, and even if they know that despite having his bird rights, they might not be able to meet his price next summer, so they risk him losing for nothing. Well, at the same time, he's so essential to your championship odds next year that there are definitely some scenarios where even if they fear that he walks after 2020, that the Rockets say, hey, whatever we could trade him for now, it would be so damaging to our championship odds in 2020 that it's not really worth it for us. We'll take one more shot with Eric Gordon alongside James Harden, Chris Paul, this current group, and we'll deal with next summer when it comes. So that, to me, is the landscape for Eric and why he's in this murky middle ground. I think Capella, the odds are more likely than not he gets moved. I think PJ Tucker, it's very unlikely he gets moved. With Eric, it's so hard to say because the true variable with Eric, it's not so much what his value is around the league. I definitely think while he's 30, he should have lots of years left and he's been a very valuable player in the playoffs. It's not whether there are fits from a basketball perspective. I absolutely think they are. And while he's not as young as Clint Capella, it's not like he's over the hill either. He should definitely be a desirable commodity. The question with Eric is the contract. With the Rockets, they're going to open extension talks. We've heard that from Kelly Eco at The Athletic. With Gordon, the same way they have with Tucker. In a perfect world, the Rockets can get him to sign on the dotted line and he'll be a part of the team for the foreseeable future. If that doesn't happen, then other teams are going to want to know the exact same thing. Does he want to be there? Is there a financial number that both Eric and that team are comfortable with? If there is, then sure, I think that boosts the likelihood of a deal. I don't know if they would make it more likely than not, but it would definitely improve the chances. But if Eric Gordon and his agent are non-committal from the standpoint of either outright signing an extension or at least giving indications as to what their expected parameters are, then at some point that may make it more likely for the Rockets to just say, hey, we're going to run it back with what we have, Eric under contract, and we'll worry about 2020 when it gets here. Because if Eric Gordon and his agent are relatively silent, then I can't see teams really giving the Rockets what it would take to really upgrade their team from a basketball standpoint. In fact, most of those scenarios would be downgrading because of how valuable Eric is by himself. So I think with Eric, the key variable, it's not so much the market, it's about Eric and his agent. Where do they want to be? We've heard that he wants to be in Houston, he wants to retire in Houston. It's just a matter of whether he can fit financially alongside a team that already has big dollar commitments to James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, and then beyond where they want to be. It's also, of course, the dollar amounts and whether that makes sense for the Rockets or any other team. Now, we'll finish up the show momentarily with a bit of more positive talk, that being about the aforementioned James Harden. There's a neat anecdote about his championship window that I think is fairly positive, a good reminder, nice perspective from Mark Stein in that same New York Times newsletter. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. But before we get there, I want to tell you about our friends over at Gallery Furniture with their incredible Memorial Day Super Sale. It has now been extended. Visit any convenient Houston area Gallery Furniture location today at 6006 North Freeway, 7227 West Grand Parkway South, or 2411 Post Oak Boulevard to shop the largest ever inventory of solid wood Amish-made furniture in Gallery Furniture history. Plus, enjoy amazing deals on name-brand mattresses, including Sealy, stunning bedroom styles starting at $599, beautifully upholstered sofas priced as low as $399, entire dining sets from as low as $599, and so much more. Gallery Furniture is receiving new shipments of quality furniture after Memorial Day weekend, and you can enjoy the amazing Memorial Day savings on these brand new items too. Gallery Furniture is now proud to serve a wider range of Houstonians with low prices on quality furniture for every room in your cherished home. Shop Gallery Furniture's extended Memorial Day Super Sale savings today and enjoy your new quality furniture purchases in your home within 3 to 4 hours when you choose same-day delivery. You can also check them out at galleryfurniture.com. Finishing up the show here on Wednesday, June 5th, this is Locked on Rockets. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show, we're looking at the late Tuesday New York Times newsletter from Mark Stein, which had lots of interesting anecdotes about the Rockets. Spent the first couple of segments looking at Clint Capella, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon, their situations, with Stein saying that the Rockets were proceeding under the belief that at least one of those three would not be Rockets in this upcoming 2019-2020 season. My opinion, Capella is by far the most likely of those three to move. PJ Tucker is the least likely, and Eric Gordon somewhere in between, and really his scenario depends on exactly what the financial terms are
that Gordon and his agent would have for an extension with the Rockets or any other team once his current contract expires following this upcoming season. Here in the third segment, I want to be a little more positive because those first two segments, I don't know if they're downers, but Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, these are really good players that have contributed to two really good Rockets teams these past two seasons, and there's a lot of apprehension that comes from moving on from one or more of those guys. I get it. Here in the final segment, I want to be more positive because also in that newsletter from Mark Stein, again, I highly encourage you to subscribe, he has a final segment known as Numbers Game. And within that Numbers Game segment, he has a bullet point and the numbers 31. After that, he explains that the Rockets have generated nothing but headlines, promising upheaval since their second-round exit to Golden State. But here's some good news for Houston's James Harden, who turns 30 in August. Hakeem Olajuwon didn't win his first championship in the NBA until he was 31. That's really crucial perspective that I think we need to all keep in the back of our minds. Just imagine if Twitter, its social media, and blogs were around in the 1980s. Hakeem came into a Houston situation, he was drafted in 84, in which they were contenders almost right away. His second year, the Rockets got to the NBA Finals. They had that Ralph Sampson buzzer beater in Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals at the Lakers, and they seemed like they could be the next dynasty. They lost those finals to the Celtics, and after that, they largely fell apart. Hakeem himself was a little bit immature. He got into a lot of fights. Ralph Sampson was injury-prone. Of course, a lot of the role players had issues with drugs. Hakeem didn't himself, but imagine if Max Kellerman and First Take were around back then. You definitely hear people questioning if Hakeem was a good enough leader, even though, of course, he wasn't the guy responsible for those things. At the same time, when you're the star and things go wrong, especially if you fall short of expectations, and after 86, people thought the Rockets could be a future dynasty in the Western Conference, yeah, there would have been a lot of skepticism. We just didn't hear it because the technology was not there then to the point that it is today with James Harden. Then after a few years of things not working out, the late 80s, very early 90s, in 92, Hakeem and his agent demanded a trade from the Rockets. Now, of course, as it turned out, less than 2 years after that trade demand was when the Rockets won their first of two consecutive titles under Hakeem, and that should be a stark reminder of just how quickly things can change. But if social media were around back then, between that team that in the mid-80s had such a bright future falling apart for various reasons, not all of them were within Hakeem's control, of course, injuries to Ralph Sampson, the drugs as far as the role players, those types of storylines. Some of it, again, Hakeem did get into a lot of fights. He had some maturity issues that he had to work through. And then you look at the trade demand when he was in his late 20s. Yeah, if social media were around back then, he would have gotten buried. It would have been a very similar narrative to what we hear a lot with really any star who has not won a title in the modern NBA. It just wasn't around back then, and the landscape was very different. And I think that's crucial perspective to remember because at times, the echo chamber of social media can be overwhelming. And that's what's really changed when I think it comes to NBA fandom. In the past, it's not that people in the 80s didn't have doubts when it came to Hakeem, but those beliefs didn't get amplified. Sure, people, they would think things privately to themselves, and I'm sure, you know, you'd speak to a friend, a family member, something like that, but there wasn't the immediate feedback loop, whereas today, whatever you believe, with Twitter, you can find hundreds of other people who believe the exact same thing that you do, and before you know it, that provides confirmation bias, and we all tend to become a lot more hardened, pardon the pun, in our opinions. That's what did not exist back then. So whereas I'm not saying that people were just truly open-minded on everything, sure, there was doubt, but there was at least an openness to the idea that it could potentially change. Whereas today, once a narrative is put into place, it is so hard to turn it because the people that believe that, they see that message amplified so quickly because, of course, with social media, we can choose who we follow. And all of a sudden, it goes from a curiosity to a belief. And once human beings have a belief, we tend to twist everything to fit that. Because no one likes the idea of random luck being a key determinant in life, even though it is. We're wired to want things to be understandable, controllable. We want to be able to feel like things are within our control, even though a lot of times they aren't. We tend to focus on the elements that are. That's human nature. But when it comes to James Harden, the reality, A lot of it is just bad luck. A lot of us don't want to accept that, but it's the truth. The bar with the modern-day Golden State Warriors, it is higher than ever. It's tough enough in any era to be the best team out of 30 in a given year, let alone this current one with the most talented team ever assembled. So a lot of us, and when I say us, I mean really any NBA fan, we're constantly looking for flaws to explain what's going on because we don't want to chalk it up to just random luck. We want their failures to be more understandable or at least controllable from the standpoint of if they did something different. But it's so easy to overdo that. As an example of what I'm talking about, with James Harden, you all know if you're on Twitter or any social media outlet, there's this idea that he isn't clutch, that he isn't the guy that you want at the end of a marquee playoff game. Except through the first two rounds of these playoffs, the only two that he played, Harden led the entire NBA in clutch scoring. Buckets in the final 5 minutes with the game within 5 points. Game three against the Warriors, he was the only guy that kept the Rockets from losing that game, and if they lose that, they probably get swept. He scored 7 points in the final 2 minutes, including five in the final minute. In game six, for all the criticism that he gets for a couple of turnovers, he scored 12 points in the fourth quarter. He at one point had a three that I was stunned by. Under 3 minutes left, Curry hit this three that seemed impossible, put the Warriors up by five. I thought it was the dagger, and Harden answered him with an even tougher shot to bring them back within two and jolt everyone in Toyota Center back to life. He did plenty of things in the clutch in the playoffs, and in that series in particular, he was outstanding. But because for some, that belief that Harden is not a clutch player was already out there, all they wanted was confirmation bias. And in today's NBA, there's enough of a sample size, you can, over the course of a game, a quarter, find anything to support your point of view if all you're looking for is reinforcement. And that's why this modern day technology, while it's great for a lot of things, it certainly helps me as a podcast host, it's connected me to a lot of Rockets fans, it can be dangerous too, because we don't have the perspective as NBA fans, or really sports fans, that we used to have. Because these days, any belief, it's so easy to fall in the confirmation bias trap because we get positive feedback so quickly. You can so easily find access to not just a friend or two that might think the same way, but hundreds of people who have the same viewpoint. And then we tend to want to follow those people because they make us feel good about our view of the world. They tell us what we want to hear. The same trap happens in politics a lot. I'm sure you know what I'm referring to. So with Harden, this is part of why the Rockets push back so hard. Perception does matter. I'm sure some of you are listening to this and thinking, Ben, isn't this all just about Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman? In the grand scheme, how much does that really mean? Actually, it can mean a lot. That's why the Rockets spend time pushing back on these narratives. Look at Kevin Durant and Golden State. That was the single biggest decision in the modern day NBA. Durant deciding to go there in July of 2016. And no matter how you feel about it, I think we can all agree it had a lot to do with perception. Durant definitely noticed how people felt about him. He said afterward that he wouldn't have joined the Warriors, for example, had they won a title. Everything about that decision, from him leaving Oklahoma City to what team he chose, the validation that he thinks he's getting by winning titles, all of it had to do with perception. This stuff matters. And with the Rockets heading into a summer in which they certainly want to take more shots at top-of-the-line free agents, the same way they did with Chris Paul a couple of years ago, they want their franchise, and specifically their star player, which Harden is, he's by far the most visible name, the most influential person in the Houston Rockets franchise, they want him to be liked. They don't want these narratives to be overblown. And that's why it is tougher to be a star today than it was 20, 30 years ago. And that's really, really important perspective. And those of us in Houston, we should be especially aware of that, considering how long it took for Hakeem to finally break through. For a lot of fans in Houston, and really this goes for any fan base, some of it, I don't think they're even meaning to be as harsh as they are. I think it's just a defense mechanism. Fans are so afraid, I see this a lot on social media, of being let down. They hate the idea of having expectations and the team falling short. So they convince themselves that their team, their star player, whoever it may be, can't win a title or whatever the goal is, so that if that doesn't happen, then they don't have that same feeling of being let down. My response to that is toughen up. Because even if Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman, I don't know how many people take them seriously, at the same time, these narratives, they are easier to take hold with regards to the broader media as a whole, and certainly the players around the league, the coaches, the perception. If Houston's own fan base isn't even behind James Harden completely, then it's much easier for people who are on the fence that haven't really decided either way to think that, hey, these narratives might have some validity to them. That's why I push back so hard on social media against some of these idiotic Harden takes. I know a lot of you say, Ben, why is it worth the time? These people are going to believe what they believe. They might, but I do believe that when it comes to the broader media, players, teams around the league, there is a perception battle, and we need to push back. That's why I do it. I think a lot of this is not fair to James Harden, who's been a fantastic player, including in the playoffs. He and the Rockets just aren't quite as elite as the current Golden State Warriors, which are, in my opinion, the greatest NBA roster ever assembled. That's not about James Harden not being good enough. That's about them being historically great. Sometimes you need to tip your hat. Seeing that Stein number and being reminded that Hakeem in Houston did not win his titles until he was 31 and 32, that should be a reminder, and especially when you think back to the first 9 years or so that Hakeem had with the Rockets, it wasn't all smooth. It wasn't if throughout that process we knew that Hakeem was going to win titles. No, there were lots of ups and downs, lots of lowlights for Hakeem personally, the team under his watch with him as the star player. They just didn't get amplified the same way that Harden's are because the social media machine was not around back then. Things didn't get blown out of proportion as easily as they do today. So that's why, number one, I'm optimistic about James Harden. We have seen players, even if they haven't won a title by 30, okay, then you can do it in your 30s. We saw that with Hakeem more recently in Texas. We saw it in 2011 with Dirk Nowitzki, who before that was known as, I don't know if choker was ever the right term. I think that's largely overblown, but the 2007 Mavs, they won 67 games, were a one seed. They lost in round one to an eight seed. The year before that, they had home court advantage in the finals, and they lost to Dwayne Wade and the Miami Heat. They were a what-if story. It comes so close so many times. Until they won. So sometimes it doesn't happen for a while, and sometimes it's not because there's some fatal flaw with the player or the organization. It just takes time. It just takes the sample becoming large enough to where quality eventually rises to the top. You get enough opportunities, and one of those years, the bounces go your way. It sucks that they didn't this year, but I think the Hakeem tale, number one, it tells you the value in perseverance and continuing to give yourself more chances. And secondly, it should remind you that, hey, there's nothing that's really all that different about James Harden than really the evolution of many stars over the history of the NBA, including Hakeem, who is still, in my opinion, the number one at the top of Mount Rushmore of Houston sports. There are lots of ups and downs. It just feels like the downs these days, and with Harden in particular, because he's such a lightning rod for criticism, his style of play, those types of things, it just feels like the downs are bigger than they are because there's that immediate amplification effect, that echo chamber of social media. So that's why I believe in pushing back. And if you're one of those fans that is just afraid to buy in because you might be let down if somehow the Rockets don't win a title, if they fall short of expectations, just toughen up. Disappointment is a part of life. If a sports team losing is one of your biggest problems, honestly, you're having a pretty good life. I know I'm getting pretty philosophical at this point, but I just don't understand fans that are so afraid of being let down, especially in a sport where we know going in that only one team out of 30 is going to win. It's not like your team is some epic failure if they don't. So buy in, believe, and beyond just the team's perception being increased, I think it also leads to better home court environments if the fan base really buys in. What I'm really trying to get to with this segment as I wrap up, there is reason to believe in James Harden and the Rockets. Even though he's about to turn 30, yeah, there are lots of stars in situations very similar to this one and which players hadn't broken through by now, and then they did. I can't guarantee you that it's going to work out, but I also can't tell you that it's not either. That's part of the joy of sports. Let's let these things play out. And as I've said all season long, and I firmly believe that moving forward, as long as you have James Harden, you have a chance. That's becoming more crystal clear than ever. And as I said during the playoffs, that's why I'm more bullish than even a few months ago about the Rockets' championship window and why I think there's still a few more years left in it assuming that Harden continues to play at anywhere near the level that we've seen of him for the past two or three seasons. Anyway, that'll about do it for tonight's show here at Locked On Rockets. If you want more content before our next episode, whenever that may be, this time of year we're waiting on the breaking news. Mark Stein had a lot of it Tuesday night in his newsletter. Perhaps there'll be another report in the next couple of days. We'll have to wait and see. But if you want more content before our next show, whenever that is, there are, of course, many ways to get that. First and foremost is Twitter, where I'm on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets, and I've got real-time updates at both of those handles. Beyond that, we've also got a website at LockedOnRockets.com, a Facebook account at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior episodes. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, those types of things. Or you can inquire about how to become a potential sponsor of the program, just like our friends at Gallery Furniture, where the incredible Memorial Day Super Sale has now been extended. Visit any Houston area Gallery Furniture location or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of the specials. You can also support our friends over at Twillery, where if you go to twillery.com/Houston, you can use the promo code Houston for $25 off on their entire line of apparel. Beyond listening and supporting our sponsors, please remember that to get this show every day, you can and should subscribe to Locked On Rockets on Himalaya's new podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Of course, you can also listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more, and I encourage you to do that and to leave 5-star reviews wherever you can. And when you get in your car or go to the gym, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and listen to our most recent episodes that way as well. Once again, thanks to all of you for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.